The start of the summer movie season used to be Memorial Day. Then it moved to the first week of May, and now it's creeping into April. But can we call the fourth installment of the Scream series, Scream 4, a potential blockbuster? What about Rio, an animated film about a pet bird out on an adventure? Or will these films make a lot of money this weekend because, really, there's not much competition? Today on All Sides Weekend, we're talking about the movies. And later this hour, we'll hear about a film festival of shorts happening this weekend. But first, the big screen. With me in the studio is Columbus Alive web producer and film critic Brad Keefe. Welcome, Brad.
Thanks, Amy.
And the other paper film critic, Hope Madden. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So Scream 4 opens this weekend. Not too long ago, well, 1996, the first Scream made a lot of money. So will Scream 4, all these years later, be a hit? What do you think, Hope?
I think it will, actually. I think I'm a big fan of the original Scream. I thought it was a Wes Craven. I'm a fan of Wes Craven's work, and he directed it, and it was a great new approach to horror movies, of sort of it's a critique of horror movies while still being a very effective horror movie. And, 15 years later, there's a whole new sort of style of horror filmmaking for them to poke fun at. And they have a good cast, and Wes Craven is helming it again, and I'm just excited to see it.
Brad, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, the first one was a really self-aware kind of fun. You know, it poked fun at the conventions, but also, you know, knew that it's really scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what... And it ushered in another generation of kind of cheap teen horror movies that got really bad again. the sequels kind of...
Are you Scream 2 or Scream 3? What are you...
they were above the pack, but none of them were as good as the original. I think I'm glad they took a break. I don't know what's happened, what new horror movie conventions they can make fun of, but...
I'm not sure if they're going to do this, but, you know, from the time that we did Scream 3 to now, the entire sort of, it's often referred to as horror porn.
Yes.
Sort of the hostile type film, you know, took over and then died out, thank God. But I do think that the conventions of the horror film have changed since he did the first one, certainly 15 years ago. And so I'm hopeful that they're going to poke... interesting new fun at the genre.
Yeah, you both mentioned poke fun. In this scene, Sydney, who's played by Neve Campbell, is talking to Jill and the gang about some phone calls.
So two of you got phone calls?
Yeah, us too. What's your favorite scary movie?
It was The Killer's Voice. From Stab? Or, I mean, you know, from your life.
And the killer didn't call you?
No. Is that a bad thing? Does that mean that I'm not going to live as long as these two?
No, maybe. Of course not. Just be careful.
Oh my God, did you hear that? I'm going to be next.
So when I watched a few clips from this, the dialogue seems very similar to the first Scream as well. What do you think? Are we poking fun, or are we going to be scared?
No, I think it's the same thing. It's a very self-reflective type of filmmaking where, you know, they try to, they try to pick apart the formulas of a common horror film to determine how their life is going to, you know. I still think it's probably a fresh enough approach to be worth seeing. I'm just hoping that it's better than, you know, just the fourth installment kind of a film.
Oh, what's fun is they've got this kind of second generation. They've got new young actors in. And, in the first movie, the Jamie Kennedy character was, you know, he was the expert because of all the horror movies he saw. But in this one, you expect characters like Sydney are just the wizened veterans. And, like, this is what happens because, you know, I've lived through three times in my life, a serial killer has just kind of popped up for a week or two.
Right. It's a funny line, you know, the voice from Stab, or, I mean, from your life. I mean, it's a funny line. I actually got a chance to talk to Emma Roberts. I went to the Toronto Film Festival this year, and we did a table interview about a movie she was in called It's Kind of a Funny Story. But she was actually there promoting three or four other films, and she was, of all the movies that she did in that sort of calendar year, she was most excited about Scream 4 because, she'd sort of graduated from the Nancy Drew type movies that she started off in, and then she just did tons and tons of these independent features, and this was her first horror movie. This was her first big-budget, silly film, and she loved it. She was pretty excited about it. So,
now, do you think that they're opening Scream 4 this weekend because they're trying to creep into the summer movie season, or do you think that this was just happened to be the right weekend for them?
My guess is that it's because it's a pretty weak weekend.
Mm-hmm.
The other, you know, big movie opening this weekend is a family film, so it's not going to be a lot of competition there. I mean, that would be my guess.
It creeps back a week every year. I mean, I think the Iron Man really pushed it to first week of May. That's
right.
It. This year, I think Thor opens.
First weekend of May, right? I don't have high expectations there.
No, Brad, tell me about this time right now that we're in, the time between the Oscars and the summer movie season. Is this, as a film critic, is this a time where you are sitting back saying, what to write about?
Well, yeah, potentially the months of late December and January for us are chaotic.
Right.
You know, we're getting dozens of screeners in the mail, all the Oscar buzz movies, and we kind of need to see all of them. And then you hit 2 months of just kind of studios dumping trash.
Right.
You know, they're always the low attendance month. I still have wondered, people go to movies year round. Why not put a good movie in February with nothing against it?
It is funny because every year one horrible movie, I always call it the Paul Blart syndrome, one awful movie comes out and makes $100 million because there's nothing else for anybody to see for 2 months.
Cold and it's rainy and you want, yeah.
Why can't it be something we want to see?
This is All Sides Weekend, and I'm Amy Jurevich. With me in the studio is Hope Madden with The Other Paper and Brad Keefe with Columbus Alive. Join our conversation. What movies are you looking forward to in the summer movie season, or what movies that are out in theaters right now did you enjoy or did you absolutely hate and wish you had your money back? 614-292-8513. That's 292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, you mentioned the family film coming out this weekend, Rio. It looks fun. What do you think, Hope?
It's got a good vocal cast.
You haven't seen it though, right?
No,
right.
They didn't screen it in advance for critics. But it does have a good vocal cast. It's the writing and directing team that did the Ice Age series, which I'm not a fan, and so I don't expect it to be sort of a Pixar level film. But, you know, I think it could be a fun afternoon with your kids. Jane Lynch, Wanda Sykes, Leslie Mann, Jamie Foxx, they do minor characters. That's great right there. And then Jesse Eisenberg and Anne Hathaway are the main two lovebirds, so to speak. So, you know, and it'll be fun to look at. I mean, certainly the trailer is beautiful. But I don't expect it to be, you know, up.
Brad, were you surprised that you didn't get to see it in advance?
Well, not really. I mean, nothing is Pixar.
Yeah.
They've literally probably made 10 of the 10 best computer animated movies.
I agree.
I don't know that anything pops into that top 10 list. But that said, you know, these used to be always guaranteed cash.
It's
true. Yeah. You know, in the early days, you mentioned Ice Age. Ice Age wasn't on par with Pixar stuff, and it still made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that it's not always the case now.
Even Disney films struggle.
Yeah. And Mars Needs Moms.
Wow.
Huge flop. I mean, it didn't get a lot of headlines, but vastly expensive movie. Just didn't hit with audiences, didn't hit with kids. Kids apparently don't like watching movies where your mother gets abducted.
Plus, it was ugly. It was visually unattractive to look at. And so at least this movie has got colorful birds going to Rio. So.
Bright colors. Mm-hmm. There you go. I mean, you know, it's like a spinning above your crib. You know, at least you see the pretty colors.
614-292-8513. And we have Michael on the line from Columbus. Michael, what's your comment or question?
Hey, I just wanted to say that I feel like a lot of times people end up with the movies that they deserve. So when people go to movies like Avatar and the first three Star Wars movies, I feel like they really are voting with their feet. So I'm not really surprised that we end up with sort of terrible movies, you know, outside of that.
What movie have you seen recently where you maybe wish you had that time back? Is Avatar your example?
Avatar is probably. I thought the plot was just awful. I mean, I read something that said that Kirk Cameron had that idea bouncing around in his head since he was 12, and I mean, I don't think it ever changed since he first conceived it. And I would say that the cinematography was beautiful, and the setting and everything was very nice. But it was just so ham-fisted in the way he tried to deliver these sort of emotional punches to the audience. And, I mean, what is it, the highest-grossing film of all time?
Sadly, it is.
Yes.
I agree with you. I think that Avatar is probably the most overrated film I've ever seen. I don't think it's uncommon for a movie that breaks ground, especially to the degree that this film does, in one particular area, that everything else is weak. That's just really, it's commonplace. There's only so much attention you can pay to a single film before it gets made. And you know, and it's true that what he did visually was really stunning, was really spectacular and completely new. But when you can't draw a decent performance from Sigourney Weaver, you've really lost something. I mean, you really needed to pay a little more attention, I think. A lot of people could disagree with me. To the story and the
millions
acting.
Millions of people disagree.
Right, right.
But I think Michael kind of stumbled upon something that we try to do as critics all the time. You know, we're watching a lot of movies, and there's always this great little movie that you just beg people to go see because you want more movies like that made.
Yeah.
There are four movies out right now that I think are under the radar, great, one of which already came and went in 2 weeks, David Schwimmer's Trust.
Oh, yeah, that really was. That was worth seeing.
So we just end up seeing what movies have good marketing budgets, is that? Or
typically, yes.
Yeah, often. Although, you know, again, a lot of times the movies that we really wish people would go see are niche market movies. They're not movies you can take your kids to. They're not going to make good date movies. You know what I mean? They're not escapist films. Trust is a difficult movie to watch, but it was worth seeing. Win-Win, on the other hand, is a small movie that is outstanding and really fits most audiences. I mean, it's a great date movie. It's an excellent family film. It's a hysterical comedy. It's a great movie. Everyone should go see Win-Win.
Why don't we talk about Win-Win after this break? This is All Sides Weekend, and I'm Amy Jurovich. You're listening to 89.7 NPR News.
Last Friday night, Democrats and Republicans finally agreed in a budget deal. And like anybody else who starts the weekend making decisions while desperate and sleep-deprived, they woke up with something surprising. The final bill has accounting tricks, fake savings, and worse, the Republicans are now introducing themselves as the Democrats' boyfriends. I'm Peter Sagal. Join us for a hungover Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the news quiz from NPR.
Saturday morning at 11 on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, deficit cards on the table, a Chernobyl-scale rating in Japan, Mitt Romney reaches for the presidency. Again, our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
This afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News.
This is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurovich, and we're talking about movies in theaters right now and the summer movie season, which is coming up in just a couple of weeks. With me in the studio, Hope Madden, film critic for The Other Paper, and Brad Keefe, film critic for Columbus Alive, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we have Vicki on the line. Vicki, what movie did you want to recommend?
I liked Hannah, and I wondered if your colleagues there have seen it. And if not, I would love to tell you about it.
Well, let's actually listen to a scene from Hannah. This is Marissa, played by Kate Blanchett, who is recruiting her killer.
Why are you here? Be concise.
I need you.
You need me? Little old me. I'm very flattered.
I need your talents, darling. I need you to do things my agency will not let me do.
Shall I kill her?
Just find her.
Marissa, did she turn out as you hoped?
Better.
All right, some creepy music in the background of
some
that
great
scene.
Music in the background.
Brad, have you seen Hannah?
I have seen it. I love it. It was so much fun. Like, it was this, like, smart but pulsating action movie.
Can you tell us a little bit about what it's about?
Hannah is a 14-year-old girl. We're introduced to her in the harsh wilderness of Finland, I believe. She's a trained assassin. Her father's a former CIA agent. A lot of her background is a mystery, which is one best left untold to the viewer. But it's essentially, you know, just a really great, tight cat and mouse chase flick.
And Vicky, are you still there? Tell us why did you like Hannah?
Well, it's just so interesting. It's just such a mix of genres. I mean, as he said, this a 14-year-old girl who's a trained assassin, and we really can't figure out why for a while. But it's not just that. I mean, can you imagine a 14-year-old girl who's skinny and blonde taking down five guys with her bare hands?
It's fantastic to watch.
Yeah, and the camera work is frenetic and crazy. But there's also a lovely family interlude where she encounters this family on vacation and kind of stows away with them, and there's some really touching moments there. I actually think the Kate Blanchett character is probably the most overdone and least interesting part of it, but it's really an odd mix of genres that work.
All right. Thanks for the call, Vicky.
You're welcome.
And Hope, did you get to see Hannah as well?
Yeah, I didn't review it. George Wolf reviewed it. He loved it. He gave it 4 stars. He thought it was a great movie. One of the things that I think – I mean, there are two things about the movie. It's just great. It's a great, thinking, exciting action movie. The director, Joe Wright, is not somebody that we would have expected to direct an action film.
The director of Pride and Prejudice.
Pride and Prejudice, oh, yeah. Right, and Atonement, for which actually Saoirse Ronan was nominated for an Oscar. But what he does with a camera is so spectacular and so much more sort of insightful and exciting than what I think we're used to in an action movie.
Yeah, there were moments that reminded me a lot of Children of Men, which Melissa Starker ranked as the top movie of the decade, and I completely agree with that. Fantastic movie.
And also just that, you know, Saoirse Ronan is a spectacular actor. And you know, one of a crop of really amazing young female performers that we have right now. It's really her and Chloe Moretz, the Liana Liberata, who was in Trust a couple weeks ago, the girl from Winter's Bone, whose name escapes me at the moment. We just have really an amazing number of young women who are just awesome.
One other thing I wanted to highlight real quick about mm-hmm. Hannah, fantastic soundtrack.
Yes.
Soundtrack by the Chemical Brothers. I know like a lot of late 90s electronica artists, you know, Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails just won an Oscar, Daft Punk, and
Tron. Who did – somebody did
that's
the
– That's Daft Punk.
Okay. So – and it's sort of a new tradition that the band is writing the soundtrack for the film directly for the film, as opposed to a director is choosing existing songs mm-hmm. to fit into the film. And God, it's just working beautifully.
Yeah, it's a great chase soundtrack.
Yeah.
Perfect. If you guys need a workout soundtrack, I say go get the Hannah soundtrack.
Hannah soundtrack. Okay. Well, and one thing that struck me whenever I was looking at the box office numbers from last weekend, Hannah is ranked 2, and it's right there in between two Russell Brand movies, Hop and Arthur.
Yeah.
So of Hop and Arthur, what would you recommend there?
It's funny. I did not see Hop. I was scheduled to see Hop on the same day that I had surgery on my foot, and I actually thought I was going to be able to go, and I was not. So I missed Hop. I actually did not mind Arthur. I'm not a huge fan of the original. I think it was... I was astonished to find that it had been nominated for 4 Oscars, the original Arthur.
Mm. I was like, this one? Wait.
No. Yeah. The Dudley Moore original. And I thought this was a fun update. Brand makes an excellent new Dudley Moore, and boy, Helen Mirren makes an excellent new John Gielgud. And Greta Gerwig is a huge step up from the old Liza Minnelli. It was fun. It wasn't a great movie by any stretch, but it was fine.
Russell Brand is everywhere.
He is.
That's great. You know, Hop just seemed to – all indications were it just was very childish. You know, if there are rabbit poop jokes in the trailer, that's a pretty good indication of where you're going with that movie.
Yeah.
But I think out of that sandwich, you should have seen Hannah last
week. Oh, my goodness,
yes. I really hope it gets good word of mouth and sees a bump this week.
And another movie that we mentioned just before we took our last break was Win-Win. And tell us a little bit about what it's about, and then we'll hear a little bit from it. Brad, can you tell us about Win-Win?
It's It's from a director named Thomas McCarthy, who has this is his third film. All of them are great.
Oh yeah,
just fantastic. His first film, The Station Agent,
loved it.
Loved it. That's one of my favorites.
Mine too.
But his stories kind of defy that quick, easy. It's essentially about Paul Giamatti is a New Jersey lawyer. He's kind of a lovable, down on his luck lawyer,
right?
Who's also a high school wrestling coach. And a new talented wrestler comes into his life.
Okay. And in this scene, Jackie, who plays his wife, who is played by Amy Ryan, is telling her husband that violence is the best solution about how she feels about a boy who was abandoned by his mother.
Makes me so angry and so damn sad to see him in this situation. He's just a kid.
Yeah, I know.
I want to go to Ohio and beat the crap out of his mom.
Come on.
No, I do. I want to beat the crap out of her and her stupid boyfriend.
Okay.
I'm serious.
I know you are. I don't think that beating the crap out of everybody is the best solution, that's all.
It feels like it.
All right, so I had to pick the clip that said Ohio just because, you know.
Yeah, actually, his mother's from Columbus.
Yes.
So you get one of those Columbus shout-outs.
That's
in the
right.
Movie.
So this came out last weekend, or was it two? I forget. Was it 2 weeks ago?
No, I think it was last weekend.
Last weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, how's it doing? Or do you think it's gonna?
It's a small movie and it's not a wide release. I mean, I know it opens at the Drexel this weekend. So, it was at the Gateway last weekend. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's at the big AMC's or not. So it's one that I think you'll be able to find around town for a while. It's not, you know, it's not a big giant blockbuster, but it's really a movie that is a crowd pleaser as well as being incredibly well written, acted, and directed.
All right, so win-win, one to see. And we got an email from Jenny because earlier I had asked if there was a movie that you wish you had never spent money to see. And she says that she wishes the kids had not seen Where the Wild Things Are, and she also wishes that she had not seen Grinch and Cat in the Hat. she says they're good examples of books that should have been left books.
And good examples of how shrewdly studios will take money away from families. they'll just make anything. Take the kids. Go see it.
Where the Wild Things Are, I think was a confusing marketing message because it's really not a family film and it's certainly not a film for children. For my money, it was a brilliant movie. I think it was probably the best movie that came out that year. It's not something. It's not a children friendly film exactly. No, it's the other two are just bad. They're just full on bad movies.
Yeah. So it wanted to be a children film, but maybe
I don't think it did. It was Spike Jonze. He knew what he was doing, and he did it well.
Yeah, you're right.
But it's just you expect a child's book to be a child's film, and this was not.
Another movie that is out. I think it came out last weekend. Is Your Highness? Brad, you want to tell us a little bit of what that's about?
It's, you know, just another typical medieval stoner movie. You know those. We see one every week. It's
with an interesting cast.
A very interesting cast because in addition to being just one of easily the crudest movie that's out right now. I mean,
wow.
Yeah, this humor is pretty ridiculous, and I kind of don't think there's a lot I can mention, but this cast.
Please don't.
I know, we're good. But it has a cast that boasts last year's Academy Award-winning actress and an Academy Award-nominated actor in Natalie Portman and James Franco.
Let's listen to this scene. Isabella, who is played by Natalie Portman, is introducing herself to James Franco's character and his brother, and the two of them are on a quest to save the prince's bride.
I'm Isabel, the last living member of the Harshbarger Order.
Well, Isabel, my brother and myself will ensure that you run into no danger while you travel with us. With our huge muscles, we shall protect you.
Who protect what?
To be fair, everyone will protect each other equally, I'm certain.
But we will protect her more because we are men.
So I had a hard time, I haven't seen it, but I had a hard time figuring out if this movie was trying to make fun, Monty Python style, or what. I didn't know what the goal was.
Yeah, there's a little Holy Grail in there. I think you kind of heard the sort of regal language of that, and part of what makes it funny is when that's punctuated with the F word, which it is frequently in that movie.
Hope, did you get to see Your Highness?
I did not, and okay. I have to admit that that was voluntary.
Okay.
I chose not to see Your Highness.
It is a stupid, stupid movie, if you like stupid humor. That's the only way I could recommend it.
Okay, and it came out last weekend.
It did.
Sorry. Okay. 614-292-8513. We have about 10 more minutes of our movie discussion. What summer movies are you looking forward to, or what's in theaters right now that you have a question about? 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And one more movie that is out right now that I did want to make sure we mentioned is an action movie, because we're going to, you know, stupid humor. We talked about the kids. Now for action, Source Code. And in this scene, Coulter Stevens, who is played by Jake Gyllenhaal, is struggling to understand what's going on in the movie.
At 7:48 this morning, Central Standard Time, a bomb exploded on a commuter train outside of Chicago, killing everyone on board. And that's the train that you've been on.
No, no, I'm right here. You're talking to me right now.
A man named Sean Fentress was on that train. He, for all intents and purposes, is now you. Every second spent explaining things puts more innocent civilians at risk.
This makes no sense.
Okay, got all that?
It makes complete sense, yes. So is this a confusing movie, like Inception-style confusing?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. Did you think so?
I thought it was kind of fantastically confusing in that you are – I mean, I went into that not knowing anything about it. It was screened about a month before it came out
for us. But I think the logic is incredibly clear in the film.
Oh, it's tight.
Right, it is. And, you know, it throws a little 12 monkeys at you, a little quantum leap at you. But it's amazing how—
A little Groundhog Day.
Sure, a little Groundhog Day, absolutely. But I think it's really, the storytelling is really clear. The direction is great. And the pace is just drum tight.
You know, the pace is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's 90 minutes long. I'm like almost all the time I see a movie and I go, 15 minutes could have been cut.
Sure, absolutely.
This movie is tight. You're in and out of there. Every second. It's one of those edgier seat movies.
It's another just a director that I can't wait to see more from. Duncan Jones, actually David Bowie's son, who did Moon last year, which I think was underseen and over-explained, unfortunately. And so I was glad to see that, I don't know, that he got a chance, a little bigger budget, you know, and he does a great job. It's just a really fun, it's a fun, thoughtful, smart action movie.
Is this a movie that the trailer gives away the whole thing? Do you think?
It is a movie that I recommended to friends. Don't read anything about it.
Mm.
In my review, I said, go see this.
Right.
If you take my word, go see this. Don't read anymore.
Right.
All right. So that's called Source Code. And that also came out last weekend, I think.
Two weeks ago.
Okay. So, and that's still in theaters right now. And 614-292-8513. We have Jeff on the line. Jeff, what's your recommendation?
Well, this is Jeff Frank from the Drexel, and I just wanted to applaud your show, Amy, for having some film critics. It's so hard to get really interesting film criticism on the radio in Columbus, and this is great to have your guests on. And I think there's a lot of good films out there right now. It's a good time to go to the movies and see films on the big screen. A couple films they haven't mentioned that we're really getting great audiences at the Drexel for are Jane Eyre, which is a new adaptation, which is very a different take on a story everybody sort of has read before, and the film that won the Cannes Film Festival last year of Gods and Men, which is a really powerful film about monks in Algeria and their decision to stay and risk their lives for their Muslim neighbors. So those are two films I just wondered if your guests had seen and had comments about.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jeff. Of Gods and Men?
Yeah, highly recommend it, really. It's another film that's beautifully directed, phenomenally well directed. The way it's a really intimate sort of reflective piece. It's the story is great, but the way that the camera just creeps in it's incredibly effective. Yeah, I highly recommend it.
And Jeff also mentioned Jane Eyre, and we received an email from Aaron. He says, speaking of movies from books, over the weekend he saw the trailer for Jane Eyre, and he's very excited. It looks like the best attempt of the story since Orson Welles, since the Orson Welles version.
Yeah, I didn't see that one.
I actually did not either. It also screened the day of my foot surgery. My husband saw it. George Wolfe for the other paper saw it, and he liked it. He thought it was competently done, but there was very little chemistry between the leads.
Okay, so that's
Jane Eyre. Second of Gods and Men.
Yeah.
Very, I mean, it's a really kind of languid, slow-paced movie, but it's tense.
It is.
It's a rare combination.
It's true.
It's very
it really
tense
keeps your attention for a movie that really has, it's sort of very, is reflective. It's beautiful.
All right. So those are movies that are in theaters right now that people can see. And since we're running out of time, we just have a couple minutes left. Let's talk about a few movies that are coming out for the summer movie season, the big blockbuster season. What is something that you are looking forward to, Brad?
I can't wait for Super 8. Oh, my gosh. I can't remember the last time I was this excited about a movie. It's a collaboration between Steven Spielberg and J.J. Abrams, who is the man behind Lost, directed the Star Trek reboot. It looks like they're intentionally going for the kind of throwback to the sort of, you know, 80s.
Goonies.
It looks like it's got
Goonies,
a lot of Goonies and
Cloverfield.
Close Encounters and really mysterious trailers, like not a lot of people, but I just know I want to see this movie.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that one as well. I agree.
When does that come out?
June, I believe.
Okay, so we're waiting till June. Yeah. And Hope, what's something that you're excited about?
You know, actually, I wanted to say that there are a lot of, you know, non-traditional films that you could see right now. I mean, Columbus has so many other opportunities. And one of the things that I really love the most about the Gateway across the street there is their Nightmares on High series. And they've got great movies every week that you can only see three times. But there's one that I can't wait to see that's coming out, not this weekend, next week, and the following. It's called We Are What We Are. And it's won awards, not just horror film awards, but like awards at real film festivals. Mm. And so that's what I'm the most excited to see. There's also a little movie that has been released but not wide yet, and I'm hoping that it'll get here this spring, called Super, which I'm excited to see because I'm not very excited about all of the superhero films coming out this summer. And this is Rainn Wilson and the guy who directed Slither a few years ago, sort of an anti-superhero
Slither
superhero
is a very different movie.
I love Slither. So I'm excited to see that, too. It's got a good cast, and it's, you know, Rainn Wilson gets helped by his girlfriend, decides to be a superhero.
And you mentioned at the very beginning that the summer movie season is kind of starting, and they're declaring at the start with Thor.
Thor.
Do you think it'll make a lot of money and just be bad?
You know what? My biggest concern with Thor, it's got Natalie Portman, so that's a good sign.
She's everywhere.
She is. Okay. She's in every single movie this summer.
Yeah.
It's directed by Kenneth Branagh, who the last time he really did a genre film was the god-awful, his version of Frankenstein. And I kind of have a grudge against that because it came out the same weekend as Pulp Fiction, and I chose to see Frankenstein first. So I've always held that against it. But Kenneth Branagh really does not handle genre film work particularly well. He's good with stage play adaptations, but he's a fine actor as well in stage play adaptations. But I'm a little concerned about his first real foray into action films.
All right. So just to recap, if you want a stupid movie, go see Your Highness right now. If you want hopefully a good scary movie, we'll go see Scream 4, right?
Yep.
And then win-win source code.
Hannah.
Yeah, the source code Hannah, I think, would be a great action double feature.
Yeah, but win-win. That's my top pick, is win-win.
All right. Well, this is All Sides Weekend, and we've been talking about movies in the theaters right now and the summer movie season. When we come back from this break, we're going to be talking about a film festival happening this weekend at the Wexner Center for the Arts about short films. So we'll go under the 40-minute mark with those. And thank you very much to Hope Madden, film critic for The Other Paper.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you to Brad Keefe, film critic for Columbus Alive.
Thank you, Amy.
And this is All Sides Weekend. We'll be back in just a moment on 89.7 NPR News.
The next Fresh Air, we play back our interview with director Sidney Lumet. He died last week. His films include Dog Day Afternoon, Serpico, and Network. His first was the courtroom drama 12 Angry Men.
I found out after I had done the movie and people liked it that it was very difficult to shoot a movie in one room. That never occurred to me.
Join us.
today at noon on 89.7 NPR News. There are many ways to get the latest local news. Follow WOSU News on Twitter or find WOSU on Facebook. Get headlines delivered to your email by subscribing to our daily news loop e-newsletter at wosu.org/email.
Support for WOSU 89.7 comes from the Women's Fund of Central Ohio, presenting Goldie Hawn for the 2011 Keyholder event on May 11th at the Ohio Theater. Tickets and more information online at womensfundcentralohio.org.
Spend some time getting caught up on what's happening in your world every Friday night on WOSU-TV. Starting at 8 is Washington Week. For local news, watch Columbus on the Record, hosted by WOSU's Mike Thompson at 8:30. And then continuing at 9, it's the McLaughlin Group. And at 9:30, PBS presents Need to Know, a program that features an innovative broadcast and web approach to news gathering and reporting. Spend your Friday night with WOSU-TV beginning at 8.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm Amy Jurevich. And the short film is just what it sounds like. Not long enough to be a full-length motion picture, but more involved and artistic than a typical YouTube video. Tomorrow at the Wexner Center for the Arts on OSU's campus, some local talent will be showcased at the Ohio Shorts 2011 screening. This event has a youth division and will show new works by filmmakers from across the Buckeye State. And to talk about short films and the event, in the studio we have Jean Pittman. She's the educator for youth programs, and she organized the youth division for the screening. Welcome.
Welcome. Thanks.
And also Corey Allmiller. He is a local filmmaker and a teacher at Hillier Davidson High School.
Howdy.
Welcome. And we also have Tim Fulton, who's the media coordinator for Wexner Center for the Arts. Thanks for being here.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
So, Corey, did I explain what a short film is? You're a filmmaker, so did I explain what a short film is properly, or do you have a better definition for me?
I really appreciated you saying that it's better than a YouTube video.
Well, yeah, I feel like it should be more artistic than just, you know, right?
I think so, too. I think a short film is essentially what you would think of as a feature film. You just have to do it quicker, and you have to do it a little more succinctly and eloquently, maybe. Mm-hmm.
What timing are we looking at? Like more than 3 minutes or less than 40 minutes? Is there a rule?
I think when you enter a lot of film festivals, they're looking for under half an hour is normally considered a short film. I think in this show, there's probably nothing over about 12 minutes. Am I right, Jean?
Well, for the youth division, there's a different time frame than for the adult division. The youth division, it needs to be 10 minutes or less. For the adult division, it's 20 minutes or less.
And my piece is only about 3 minutes long.
Your piece is 3 minutes long. Tell us a little bit about this piece. It was selected for the adult division, which is being – so the adult division, they're showing a whole series of shorts tomorrow night at the Wexner Center, and yours is one of them. What is yours about?
It's about rites of passage, sort of about adventure, and it's told through the lens of my grandfather, my father, and myself. So it's sort of a little portrait of us. There's no dialogue. It's told through – visuals and photographs and, yeah, fun things like that.
Do you know if a lot of films that get entered into a shorts competition, are they usually no dialogue kind of movies? Does it vary?
I know personally I make sort of both. I do things mm-hmm. that are narrative and I do things that are a little more experimental. As far as this show, I'm not sure.
You know, it's a really, really wide range. There's we get films that are animations. We get claymations. We get music videos. There's docudramas. There's infomercials. There's spoofs. There's comedies. There's drama. There's mystery. I mean, it's just all over the board, which is great.
Great. So you take a whole series of films that get entered and you narrow it down to what you can fit into the event, right?
And what the jurors prefer. You know, different years, there's different juries that have different preferences. So, you know, it can be very different groupings at different years.
Now, tell me about the youth division. Is it high school students, or does it include any college students, mainly younger than that?
It's 18 and under. We have young, very young people submitting work as young as 7, 8, 9 years old. We have one of our prize winners is our honorable mention winner is 9 year old who's making films. So younger and younger people are making movies, and you know the technology is very accessible, and the editing and the cameras are easier and easier to work with. And I think it's really exciting to see films with kids with their dolls and toys making stop motion animations, for example. And it's fabulous. I wish I was able to do that at that age.
Where are these kids? Where are they making these films? Are they making them at home, in school, or are they making them at home?
They're making them at home. They're making them at school. They're making them outside, you know, in their backyards with their toys. It's great.
Tell and Corey, you have some students who are in the youth division.
That's right. I'm a high school teacher in Hilliard City Schools as well, and we have a pretty strong media program at Hilliard Davidson. Eight of my students are in the show this year, so I'm pretty darn proud of them. And those range from animations that are very experimental to sort of slapstick comedy to things that are pretty thoughtful. And I think one of the great things that Jean and her jurors do for the show is they pick a wide variety. They pick a range of things that showcase just how thoughtful kids are. And I think a lot of times kids don't get the deserved credit that they are deserved, and they do a really nice job of that. So,
do you have in your classes? Do you have any filmmakers who have aspirations to be a full-length feature filmmaker?
Absolutely, and it surprises me every year. There's always about two or three kids that come in saying, "I'm going to be a filmmaker, and that's what I want to do." And then there's always those two or three kids that come in and say, "I took this class on a whim, and it completely changed my life. I had no idea that this is something that I could do." You know, as an educator, that feels really good. But as a lover of movies, that feels really good, too, to know that I potentially have had a hand in making things that are of quality and substance instead of YouTube videos.
This is All Sides Weekend, and I'm Amy Jurovich. You're listening to 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about the Ohio Shorts screening, which has a youth division and an adult division. It's this weekend at the Wexner Center. For more information, you can visit our website, wosu.org/allsides, or you can visit the Wexner Center's website as well, wexarts.org.
Correct.
Yes, wexarts.org. Yes, okay. And with me in the studio is Tim Fulton with the Wexner Center. We also have Corey Allmiller, who is a local filmmaker and a teacher, as he mentioned, at Hilliard-Davidson. And Jean Pittman, who is an educator for youth programs, and she organized the youth division screening. And either Jean or Tim, the Wexner Center's been doing this. This is the 16th year?
That's correct, 16 years.
So short films, is it something that you view as important, you know, something that is something the Wexner Center's dedicated to?
I think it's one of sort of the legs of the stool, certainly film in general, for the stuff that we present at the Wexner Center with, we have contemporary visual art, film program, and then a performing arts program. Also within the center that a lot of people don't know about is we have our film studio program, where we bring in primarily professional video artists to come in and use our resources, help edit film, master film. But then also this competition really reaches out to the community a lot more than it enables us to reach out to the community and have them show their work here. So we've had a lot of success this year, I think over 60 entries in the youth division, around 50 in the adult division, and that gets pared down to probably a third of total entries. So.
And these are only people are allowed to enter if they're from Ohio, so you're helping Ohio filmmakers?
Correct, yeah. I think the basic rules are Ohio has to be produced within the last 18 months, and then we had talked about the time limitation, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And besides having a youth division, I feel like are shorts where maybe a lot of filmmakers get their start? Is that they're deciding what they're going to do with their lives, and they're like, I'm going to make this short a short?
I think it's a way to practice. I mean, it's like sketching to a certain extent, but I think for kids especially, it's good to have sort of the restraint of a certain time frame and a certain theme. I think a short is actually a piece that, as Corey mentioned, you need to be really succinct. I mean, a lot of kids who make movies, they sometimes forget that sometimes a really simple, basic idea and execution totally has it in the bag. I mean, you can just make a really great, simple movie It doesn't need to be a really long, complicated. I'm thinking there's one piece in particular from one of your students, Corey, where it was the winter piece that where it was very simply he depicted winter in the Midwest. And it was very sort of moody and atmospheric, and you know he was totally able to kind of capture what it's like to be in the Midwest, like in February, and in a really beautiful sort of deep, thoughtful way. And you know I think that's a great way to start thinking about a whole when you think about a feature length film and thinking about creating mood and atmosphere. You know, you've got to practice in these little vignettes. Okay, this is how I do this. This is how I do that. It's like developing a vocabulary.
614-292-8513 or send us an email to allsides@wosu.org. That's how you can join the conversation. If you have a question about short filmmaking or if you have a question about the short film series at the Wexner Center, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, immediately when I think of short films, I think of there are shorts categories in the Oscars. There's the documentary short subject, animated short subject, and live subject short. Now, when a lot of people talk about the Oscars and they talk about the broadcast being too long, and they immediately when they say, what do we cut out, they say cinematography or editing, and then they say cut out the shorts. But they've hung in there. They're still the shorts categories. Corey, what do you think of whenever you think of short films winning Oscars?
I thought that one of the best speeches this year at the Oscars was given by the short film director. He did a piece called God of Love, I think. And, you know, he seemed like the most genuine person in the entire auditorium. he said something about needing – he wished he had gotten a haircut. And I actually went on iTunes and bought his movie just based on hearing him talk, and it was such a fantastic little film. So I think it's really important to have this medium because not everybody can spend the kind of money or find the financing that it takes to make a feature. It's a lot more accessible to make a movie that's under 20 minutes long and still do a heck of a job making that movie.
So when you talk to your students, do you talk to them about you know, short films and say, hey, there's even Oscars for those?
Oh, sure. And we watch a lot of examples. You know, some of my favorite music video directors like Michel Gondry and Spike Jonze, and you show things like that and kids are just blown away because it's not anything that they've seen on TV. And it's not things that they're seeing in the theaters. And so I think that having that sort of, you know, that other vehicle for them to say like, wow, I can make something short and smart and funny and everything else.
And this festival or screening, I don't know exactly what you call it, whenever I saw it, it appealed to me because, first of all, it made me think that you get to see a lot of movies in a very short period of time, right?
Yes.
And
yeah.
And if you don't really like one, it'll be 5 minutes.
Exactly. It'll be over within 15 minutes and it'll be all done. Yeah, we have it's 35 total films this year. It's two different programs. The youth division's at 4:30 in the afternoon. That division actually has a first, second, and third prize winners that have already been chosen, and then also an audience award, and we have a reception for the kids and their families afterwards. Only $2 for 17 films, and then that evening just $3 for those 18 adult films. Those are a little bit longer, but looking at the submissions, I mean, a lot of them are 1 minute 39 seconds, 4 minutes 17 seconds, really like short, succinct, and a lot of different ideas this year. So,
are the submissions for the adult division main teachers the way Corey is, or are they artists and or is it just run the gamut?
It really runs the gamut. I think Corey's a special case in terms of being a teacher. We have in the adult.
Thanks, Tim.
He's special.
He is special.
We do have a lot of people every year that submit over and over because they do produce new pieces each year. But then we have an Ohio State faculty member in the art department, Michael Mercil, has a piece in this year. A lot of semi-professional to non-professional artists. So,
and Gene, whenever you're looking at your entries, are you getting a lot of high school students? I know you mentioned that there's even a 9-year-old, but mm-hmm. Where do you see most students doing that?
We get a lot of high school kids from all over the state. You know, we get entries from Cincinnati and Cleveland, and we get a lot of several entries from smaller towns. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people making movies these days. There's a lot of people shooting video, and you know, we get a wide variety of entries. We sometimes get this year we had sort of an interesting. You know, there's all sorts of video competitions all over. And, for example, there was a video competition for teens for the Arnold sports event.
Oh, okay. You know?
And so we got a cluster of videos from some kids who had submitted the Arnold. And the theme for the Arnold was the mind of the athlete. And so there were these videos that we got that were very much designed to get into that competition. And the one that we selected as the first prize winner actually was a spoof on all that. So it was great to view all these videos that were sort of created for a particular competition, and then to see them being submitted to ours, and that got filtered in with all the rest that come in, which, you know, there's videos that have to do with. You know, kids struggling with relationship issues. Some of our movies are actually very realistic. I mean, I think kids oftentimes feel like they can communicate in a video or film in a way that they maybe couldn't, maybe face to face or out in the world. And so we get a lot of really very intense videos and really well made ones. So there's ones that are definitely very fun and lighthearted, and ones that are just very experimental. But we also have ones that are actually quite serious and dramatic, and all different kinds.
And Corey, what kind of equipment are your students using? Is it flip cams, or is it?
A little more advanced than flip cams, but. The bulk of our budget actually comes – Hilliard does a really wonderful film festival, and I say Hilliard, but it's a fellow teacher, Dan Gerdeman, and myself. And this year we had, you know, almost 600 people come to our film festival just to watch movies by kids at Davidson. And so we take half the proceeds of that and give it to charity, and then we take the other half and invest it into future generations of technology. And so I've sort of built up a small arsenal of little high-definition – hard drive cameras, and we use Final Cut Pro. The kids are using the same thing
Great.
That, you know, the Coen brothers edit with, mm-hmm. and I think that's really empowering for kids, too, when you show them this insanely complicated software, and then you say, you know, this is something you can do.
And is that what you're using, too, when you make your films?
Yep, absolutely. And then I started shooting recently with a DSLR, a digital camera that just looks like a regular camera, and it's actually sort of wonderful to take on vacation and things like that. You can get very candid things, but the quality on these cameras is pretty incredible, and it's sort of revolutionized, I think, short filmmaking in general right now.
Gene, do you get entries that have, you know, the fancy cameras, and also some that maybe are not quite as fancy?
Absolutely. There's all different kinds of technology out there, and you know, there's some and some kids have access to some types of equipment and technology, and some kids don't, and that doesn't necessarily change the quality of the work, but it does create a whole different look. And you know, it's interesting to see what kids are doing with what they've got. For example, the 9-year-old who I was speaking about earlier, she works with the camera, just as you described. She does a stop motion with her toys and with dolls and stuff. And so, you know, you don't need to have a lot of really fancy equipment in order to convey some really basic ideas.
All right. You've been listening to All Sides Weekend, and I'm Amy Jurovich. Thank you to Tim Fulton with the Wexner Center. Thanks for being here. Also, thanks to Corey Allmiller, local filmmaker. And thank you to Gene Pittman, who is working on the youth division. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And the Wexner Center for the Arts is having its Ohio Shorts screening this weekend, tomorrow, in fact. And you can visit wosu.org/allsides for information, or wexarts.org. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.